Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. Whitewatersc.ie.
Okay, on the way, Owen is going to be chatting with a child and adolescent psychotherapist as regarding why do we share pictures of our children online, given all the safety concerns about doing things like that. Now, some of the messages coming in early regarding the government's intentions of borrowing and so forth, and even tax cuts, although some others saying it's going to be a tough budget in October. A listener says, when is he going to start paying for it, Clem? Well, I think that can has been kicked down the road for a long, long way ahead. I remember a time when RTE showed a prime time Premier League game every Saturday. So do I. But unfortunately, they haven't the money to pay for it anymore. You're paying him too much if he's able to afford all these channels, Owen Beattie, says Mary Donnelly. Okay, 50% wage cut for Oney later in the afternoon because he's able to pay for all these things. Clem, isn't it a disgrace to where National Broadcasting Service does not show our national games? They charge enough money for a TV licence. If they weren't paying disgraceful salaries to their staff, they could show our national games. Well, it's all to do about a rights thing. RT doesn't really have the decision in that. Whoever owns the rights, the GAA can decide who they allowed to broadcast their games and what games they allow to be broadcast. That's why you see some on RT, you see some on Sky, and you see some even on the GAA's own video service and stuff like that in regards to that as well. Okay, let's keep that going. But let's go back to that story that's just breaking that Owen told us, that Maynooth new homes are back for sale as the deal with the UK investor is called off. We're talking about the 115 houses at Mullen Park Estate, which kicked off the whole controversy around new homes and in some cases full estates being sold to international investors who would then lease them back to county councils at quite enormous rents and that. Angela Mullen is Angela Feeney indeed, is a Labour councillor for the Clanmaynooth Municipal District. Good morning, Angela.
Morning, Clem. It's a good news day.
It seems like a very good news.
Good news, isn't it? And you know what, Clem? It just shows you the importance of public pressure as well. I know that there were eruptus changes and so on, but KFM and yourself has to be congratulated because I believe that from what I understand, it was apparently the sheer strength of public feeling on this matter that has informed the move. So well done to KFM and what it did in this.
Well, thank you for that, Angela. We're here to serve the community, and I don't say that lightly or in enough and way. So the developer of the Mullen Park Estate in Maynooth is to offer the remaining homes of the scheme for individual sale rather than to proceed with the deal to sell them in their entirety to a UK property investor, Roundhill Capital.
Which is great news for prospective buyers and first-time buyers as well, and owner-occupiers who are, as we all know, Clem, there's a long list of people looking for a home in the county. And part of the outcry around this was that there were so many people on the waiting list for those homes, and then they saw people coming in, you know, buying them in bulk and said they'd never have a hope of buying a house here or elsewhere. So it's great news, and I believe that they will go on sale. They'll see these 115 three- and four-bedroom houses being brought to the market in three phases between now and early next year.
And
so it's great news. And the council can put in a bid for that as well now. You might remember, Clem, that the council was very interested in buying these houses as well to take people off the social housing list. So it's great news. You know, I'm delighted to see it happening.
Well, I understand Ronald Quinlan's report that he also makes the point regarding Kildare County Council that a further 20 houses, which had reportedly formed part of Kelston Properties' proposed portfolio sale to Roundhill, the UK investment fund, will be acquired by Kildare County Council for social and affordable housing under the terms of Part 5 of the Planning and Development Act. So 115 three- and four-bedroom houses will go for public individual sale, with Kildare County Council reportedly buying 20 of the houses.
Yeah, well, that's part of the Part 5 anyway, Clem, that would have probably happened anyway, because the council under the legislation and Part 5 of the Act would get those 20 houses. But in the round, it now means that there's potential for the council to put in a bid for those 115 houses. You might remember that were through to a the agency, they were trying to buy those for those houses in the first phase.
Yeah.
But now they can actually do that, or put in a bid at least, you know. So it's great news.
Indeed it is. And just to add to that, by the way, I suppose the other side of it is what they will cost. The houses are expected to start from €395,000 with the first tranche of houses due for completion this September, Angela.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it probably didn't harm the situation, Clem, that the stamp duty, you know, the introduction of that legislation, which introduced, you know, a tax jump from 1% of stamp duty overnight, it went to 10%. That probably didn't harm the deal either. But I think overall, Clem, this was really about the public pressure that came on and the outcry, and really, you know, how first-time buyers were really being outpriced out of the market. So well done to KFM, yourself and the team, and thanks for focusing on it.
Well done, Angela. I know I don't want this to turn into a mutual admiration society, but where thanks is deserved, you yourself were the person who brought this to KFM's attention the very first day and furnished us with all the details. And I mean, in fairness, we took it on from there, but it was your initial contact and digging and publicising of the matter that helped to bring it to public perspective. This is great. And for listeners, by the way, who are thinking, I'd love a house in that development, because they are quite beautiful homes, I have to say. The auctioneers are, and the agents are, Hook and MacDonald. So if you want to Google them and whatever else, and maybe get your inquiries in, and maybe start getting your expressing your interest in acquiring one of those homes, the demand is probably going to be enormous, Angela.
I'd say so, but, you know, look at it. Isn't it good that it's actually going through a normal process, and there are houses now available for people to buy? And that's the most important thing, Clem, to get people into homes and to be able to, you know, get on with their lives.
And hopefully now, this is the very first of this trend that will continue, which has been happening around the whole way around the country, that the tax changes applied to these international investors and the pressure being brought to bear by public representatives and indeed ourselves in the media will result in many more hundreds and maybe hopefully thousands of these homes coming onto the market for individual buyers. So that is great news. The developer of the Mullen Park estate in Maynooth is to offer the remaining homes of the scheme for individual sale rather than proceeding with a deal to sell them in their entirety to the UK headquartered property investor Roundhill Capital, as broken by Ronald Quinlan in the Irish Times. And Hook and MacDonald are the agents for the sales. Labour Councillor Angela Feeney, well done you. And thank you for alerting us this morning in regards to that as well. Good morning to you.
Appreciate that, Liam. Thank you.
Owen. Well, my attention was drawn to the following headline in yesterday's Irish Examiner by my next guest. Why do we share pictures of our children online? Dr. Coleman Nochter is a child psychotherapist, and the first line in the article says, I recently saw a meme that read, I wish my kids would leave me alone while I repeatedly refresh Facebook to see who liked my post about my kids. Dr. Coleman Nochter, good morning to you and welcome to the programme.
Good morning, Owen. How are you?
I'm not too bad. This really is a topic that is quite divisive, and people can tend to have strong opinions on it, but it is a question that doesn't really have an answer to it, why we do share pictures of our children online.
Yeah, I mean, I think from the point of view of, and the angle I was trying to take in the article is that it's really, like everything with technology, it's not right or wrong. It's probably to do with how we do it or the amount that we do it that's the issue. And I think from the point of view of our understanding of what we know to be sharing has undergone a great change. I mean, the idea of before, when we were sharing something, we had something and we would give it to somebody who might need it or want it. Whereas now sharing is much more like, if I share a music link or a video or a joke, it says something about me. So the share is a self-announcement. And in doing so, you know, when we share things about our children, we're saying more about us than we are about them. Because, you know, if I send a picture of my six-year-old, you know, winning student of the week in senior infants, his peers are not going to see that. It's not for them. It's not, it's for me and for my friend group. And it's, you know, in many ways it's saying, look, I'm doing a good job. And there's essentially nothing wrong with that. That's absolutely fine. But we need to be kind of honest and aware of why we're doing it. And the other thing is that it tends to get a lot of clicks. Like when we share things about our children, I do it. I've put pictures of my kids eating an ice cream, and it would get far more likes and clicks than anything work-related or even trying to, you know, promote my column or something for the week. Mm. And so the algorithm picks up on that and says, look, people like this, let's send more of it. So you'll get things like Facebook memories and this sort of thing prompting you to keep sharing more and more and more. And the algorithm just wants you to share and wants to profit build on what you're doing. But sometimes we can be a little bit seduced by the algorithms and the likes and maybe lose the concept of what it is that, in terms of our children's digital footprint, what are we doing at a cost of that?
And as you say, posts online is essentially a reflection of ourselves. And you touched on it there that, you know, we might put a picture up of our child to one student of the week or student of the month. But again, it is really for our own validation or for people to see what a good job we're doing of rearing our kids. Because you can be quite sure that we're not going to put pictures up that paint our kids or ourselves in a negative light.
No, and again, you know, when we post online, and again, it's our hoped for self is what we're trying to kind of portray. You know, it's not necessarily our real self. It's not a false self, but it's just these are highlight reels of our lives. And I think probably one of the things I would probably book against in terms of contemporary dynamics is competitive parenting. And I think social media has become a platform for competitive parenting. Do you know what I mean? In terms of, if I don't have, I see, own Beattie's kid is winning black belts in karate and my 10-year-old can't tie his shoelaces, I'm going to start, feeling under pressure that, you need to get out there and do something Facebook worthy for me to kind of keep up with this. And, and it does happen. And I mean, example, a number of years ago, I had a young kid who's coming to see me and she'd done really well in her leaving cert, and she looked really disappointed about it. And I remember saying to her, "What are you disappointed about?" She said, "I got 320 or something." And I said, "That's great." And she said, "Yeah, but Mom put on Facebook that I got 400. And so there was a kind of that it was more important to kind of impress the neighbors than it was to be authentic. And I think from the point of view of, we just need to make sure that we don't get lost in the moment of capturing the event and miss the moment. Do you know what I mean? And I think, when we are maybe taking videos of our children opening their Santa presents and things like that, are we able to be in the moment when we're doing that or not? And, just to be mindful and be aware that the likes and validation it's a dopamine hit. It excites us. And when we get the notifications that something is getting some traction and things like that, it's the way in which the technology is built is for us to share more and more and more. And, I plan to do a follow-up column next week on the digital footprint, rights of children to be forgotten, and in terms of that if your child is ever going for a presidential campaign, do you want that picture of him and his brother in the bath to be brought up at that point? And how do we kind of protect children whilst all the way engaging in something that is quite harmless? But I think that the other thing is, and I make this point in the article, that the best way of getting a campaign going is to make something shareable, and it makes it feel altruistic. And I said in 2012 I grew a big handlebar mustache and collected a few quid for men's health, but really my motivation was to kind of grow the mustache rather than collect the funds, if I'm honest. And doing the ice bucket challenge, that was more about me sharing a kind of a video of myself. So it was announcing kind of I'm a good person and I like charity and this is a funny thing that I did, which wasn't if I'm honest, the focus wasn't MLS or men's health, and so from the point of view of, if you can get something like the Movember movement or whatever it might be, that where sharing your achievements becomes important, we can kind of get a bit of altruistic narcissism is probably what it probably would be technically called.
Yeah, and again, that ties in with the point as well that I was saying, that a lot of the stuff that we do put on social media, whether we mean to do it or not, it's always the positive side of our lives. We'll put up the best pictures of ourselves, we'll put up our best achievements, as opposed to maybe those things we're not so proud of. But at the same time, there's no real right or wrong answer here, or right or wrong way of doing things, because while you might have parents or people in general who are happy to be sharing these things, there's also those people who are relatively relatively private. And there's nothing wrong with not putting pictures up of your children either. That doesn't mean that you're less proud of them.
Yeah, and again, it is about your comfort in that place. And like, if I give a euro to a homeless person, but I take a picture of it and put it up on Instagram that I gave a euro to a homeless person, the person is still getting a euro. There's nothing, you know, although the intention was to paint me in a particular light, you know, these are really good things. Like, and you know, if you don't have shareable moments, that doesn't mean that you're not doing parenting as good as somebody else. Many of the things that our children are, you know, the really nourishing parts of their self-worth and self-belief and their resilience and all those things, they probably wouldn't be the things that have the accolades, the prize and the medals. And I would be a critic that, you know, a lot of our society rewards children for all the wrong things, rather, you know, the fastest kid, the sportiest kid, the brightest kid. But, you know, those kids who come through adversity, those kids who manage really well, are kind and generous, there doesn't seem to be too many plaudits for that. And just because, you know, your child doesn't give you moments to that are Facebookable doesn't mean you're not doing a great job. And again, that prerogative of you to share or not share is up to yourself. But my message is just to kind of, let's be aware of why we do it and maybe be honest about it too. You know, if you're sharing a picture of your lasagna that you just made, it's because you're proud of it. And there's nothing wrong with that. But just know that that's the reason why we're doing it.
Yeah, and the final point then as well, Coleman, that I want to make on this is, again, if you put a picture up of your child and an achievement that they have done on social media, they're more than likely probably not going to see it, depending on what age they are. So it's important to praise them at home as well as putting the picture up.
Absolutely, and that's where the capturing of the moment, you know, usurps the moment itself, whereas, you know, By trying to share something, do we miss the actual nugget of connection? And, you know, yeah, but before you post anything, you know, tell them you're proud of them first, and then maybe put up the pictures for uncles and aunties and everyone else.
Yeah, certainly a thought-provoking conversation and an excellent article as well. When I saw it in the Examiner, I thought it was very, very interesting. And as Coleman said, there'll be a follow-up piece as well in next week's paper. Dr. Coleman Nocter, child psychotherapist, many thanks for joining us on the programme this morning.
Thank you.
Yeah, great slot that, actually. I was quite interested listening to that, and so well articulated as well. Well done, Owen, and well done, Dr. Nocter, in regards to that. So I think food for thought there for all of us when we're going to put up photos online, particularly of children. Now, some other messages coming in before we go to the break, and then we'll be heading to the Naas Municipal District. Look at the financial picture. They probably reckon they will get more money selling them privately, says a listener, in regards to the developments. Well, of course, that's what it is. Nobody is suggesting for a moment that the developers in Mullen Park have decided to start selling the houses you know, out of a grow for the Republic and the flag and everything like that. This has been predicated by public pressure, by public representative pressure, by the media pressure, and in particular by the government's changes to the tax regime, which would see the international developers having to pay a lot more money, etc. Clem, in relation to the proposed easing of COVID-19 gatherings, says another listener, I feel that we're on a slippery slope to a very alarmingly high positive numbers. Well, we are. There's no doubt about that. We are. They're already up on the 700. We're talking about a couple of thousand cases a day by September. But the good news is, because of vaccination and that, the impact on our hospitals and health sector won't be as bad as it had been originally. The signs are there. Yes, when you look, the UK has around 37,000 cases yesterday, by the way, the number I saw. And our listener says in the UK, there's talk of doubling of numbers every 9 days. That will happen here too. You know, and the death rate, and you go into that, we will. But get your vaccinations if you haven't got it, if you're on the list to get it, and be very, very careful observing the protocols. Even those of us who've been vaccinated, there are many, many reports of people contracting this COVID Delta. So just be careful and keep up the effort. That's what we'd say. Remember the flag. Remember the country. Come on, we got to do it for the nation. And step up and make ourselves available and whatever else. Right, coming up, Councillor Anne Breen, and we'll also be speaking with the chair of the United Trade Unions approved driving instructor branch. They're very critical of the Road Safety Authority's threat to cancel people's tests without a refund. Now, why would they do that?
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Welcome back then. In a moment, we'll be with Anne Breen. But the Unite Trade Union has rejected the latest what it calls unsafe practice of the Road Safety Authority, as the Road Safety Authority threatens to cancel driving tests without a refund. Well, let's see what all of this is about, because Chair of Unite Trade Union's approved driving instructor branch is Dominic Brophy. Good morning, Dominic.
Good morning, Clem.
Now, what have the RSA done to upset you?
Well, the problem here is there's driving testers being trained at the moment, and we understand that they have to be trained, but driving test applicants are arriving on their big day for their test, and they're finding out at the last moment that there is going to be an extra person in the car sitting behind them, so there's going to be three people in the car for their driving test. The applicant is not asked for permission or whether that is okay with them, and the driving instructor whose car is being used is not being asked the same question. And we believe that this is not complying with social distancing recommendations. And we believe that, and we feel, as a matter of decency, and considering the pandemic that we're all living through at the moment, that this is a question that should be asked and consent should be given.
But let me put this to you first, Andy or Dominic. In regards to, we'll take the normal situation whereby you have the person who's doing the test and the instructor sitting right beside them. So what is the problem with somebody sitting in the back seat? Obviously, I presume windows are being kept open to encourage ventilation. People would be wearing masks. So essentially, from that perspective, the person in the back seat is effectively further away from either the instructor or driver than they are from each other, are they not?
Yes, well, there is three people in the car, Clem. It's in a small, confined space. What you're saying is correct. All three people would be wearing masks and windows would be open for ventilation. But that doesn't take away from the added danger that's added to the situation. The applicant does not ask questions like, have you got any underlying health conditions? Have you been vaccinated yourself? Have you any family members that have underlying health conditions? So it's usually a young person, not in all cases, but the majority of applicants are very young people, 17, 18, 19 years of age. And they're given this ultimatum when they arrive at the test centre.
So that unless they accept the third person, they will not be allowed to proceed with their driving test and they will not get a refund. Now, given that we have a backlog of nearly a quarter of a million, 225,000 people currently waiting on a driving test or theory test, this certainly is going to exacerbate that situation. What position is your union taking on this matter? Are you thinking of withdrawing your instructors until this is clarified? Are your testers?
No, we're not looking to withdraw our instructors. What we're looking for is we're looking for communication. And communication is key here. You know, it's very simple. It would be very simple for the Road Safety Authority, when they send the email to the applicant, to ask them these questions. On your day, you have been selected as a test. There would be a supervisor involved in your test. Are you comfortable? And ask the relevant questions. Now, that applicant can simply refuse or accept.
Yeah.
And
if they refuse, they're told, right, you're not doing your test. Meanwhile, the RSA claims, the Road Safety Authority, that they have sent what they call, and I quote, all relevant health and safety protocols are followed in the operating of the service for driving test candidates, driver testers, and the accompanying supervisors are fully protected in the carrying out of tests. But you wish to disagree with that such information has been required, or specifically you're looking for the expert health advice which might underpin the view expressed by the Road Safety Authority.
Well, we all know, every person in the country knows, that if you have three people in a car, there's an added risk. If you have two people in the car, there is a risk. But the driving instructor is accepting that risk by the fact that they've arrived on the day with their customer. The learner driver is accepting that risk of two people in the car. I think it's unfair on the test day, which is a very stressful day for the applicant as it is, and it's a very big day for them, that they are given this last moment stress. So they're going into their driving test, and they could be thinking, oh Jesus, my dad's at home and he has an underlying health issue.
Yeah.
I have an underlying health issue, and I don't feel at 17, 18, 19 years of age that I can turn around to a driving tester, a road safety authority employee, and saying, no, I'm not sitting my test today, because the consequence of that is that they lose €85 to a young person that's probably out of work at the moment because of the pandemic. So this is a financial burden on them. So they lose that, and they also know that now they're going to the bottom of the queue.
All right, on that note, we'll keep a watching brief on that. Dominic Brophy, chair of the Unite Trade Union's approved driving instructor branch. Thank you so much for that, Dominic. Let's go to the Naas Municipal District and Labour Councillor Anne Breen. Good morning, Anne.
Good morning, Clem. Good morning to your listeners.
Hope we find you well. And
yes.
Regards to himself, Larry Breen, noted local historian, also in regards to that. Now, Anne.
Thank you.
Your motions. You want the council to engage with residents and business groups from Canal View, Chapel Avenue and Main Street, Salins. Why?
Yeah, there are quite a few issues here, Clem, in respect to road safety, parking, including residents' parking, businesses functioning, and social distance in respect to COVID restrictions. In this community, groups are at the centre and they're at the core value of what's happening in the area. I'm sure that the proposed plans for Salins will have an impact on the area, and therefore the planners will only but benefit by engaging with local groups for their opinion and knowledge of the area. I know that people are generally concerned and they will need help, and they appreciate information and guidance from the council.
All right.
And I spoke to Mairead Hunt. She's a member of the Public Realm team, and she's getting emails as well. They need to talk to the people living in the area, because that's where the problem is and that's where it's going to be sorted out. So my advice to the Public Realm team is to go out and talk to the people, try and get some idea of what's happening out there, because it's a beautiful area, it's a great amenity, and it's great to have that amenity in Salins. But everybody has to work together.
Okay.
To be able to live together and do their work.
And do you still feel the need for public portaloos in the Naas Municipal District, given that the restaurants and pubs will open up shortly?
Well, if the restaurants and pubs open up, that's okay. But at the moment, Clem, if you age-friendly people, expecting mothers, if they go into town, they've nowhere to go for public convenience. It's the same at night time. You know, you look at what happened in Naas about a month ago. It was dreadful, the scenes that we saw in Naas. And if traders are going and restaurants are going to eat outside, they need to have a public port-a-loo. And where are we going to put it? But this is a pilot scheme that has been started now in Maynooth, and there's no words for it being introduced in Naas. So I welcome the fact that the restaurants and the pubs will be opened up. They'll be able to use their facilities, but at the moment, there's nowhere for anybody to go for public convenience.
All right, Anne, and I see that you asked the council to confirm if work with respect to Section 59 notice issued on St David's Castle is progressing as planned, and the works required, the council responded, the works required to St David's Castle under the Section 59 notice are progressing as planned. So therefore, that's the news on that, and the motions brought by Labour Councillor Anne Breen to this week's meeting of Naas Municipal District. Anne, good talking to you again.
Thank you, Chairman.
And thank you indeed for joining us.